Can you hear me all right, though?
I can.
Did somebody say something?
Actually, come to think of it, how do we sound with the microphones?
You are the problem, and you sound fantastic.
Oh, perfect. You can look down. My microphone is literally right in front of my face.
I am not looking down.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, Lord. That's like looking left.
Yeah, it's a little black nubbin. It's always a black nubbin to catch you when you tell somebody to look. Huggy, all I can see is the reflection on your dome right now. Why are you all the way back there?
Because I was actually working on something, but trying to kill two birds at one time.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen.
It looks great.
Yeah.
He's trying to get that wide angle view in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Why is there a hole in your ceiling? I can see so much about what's going on right now. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Are we ready?
Is that ventilation?
I've been recording. Are we ready to start this thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm good to go.
All right. Welcome to episode 5 of the Shooters. What is it? Oh, the Casual Shooters Podcast. How about that?
Probably good to read.
It's a wonderful day. Okay. Woo. So, Huggy, what were you saying? It was too muddy for you to go out and shoot the ammo?
Yeah. Where I go to test the chronograph, the bullets and everything, it was just way too muddy to get down in there. And I just didn't feel like trying to four-wheel drive in and a four-wheel drive out. So, unfortunately, today I will not be able to chronograph the bullet. So,
again, I don't think it's going to be a problem. So, whenever you get to it, you get to it.
Right. Well, I'm hoping that I'll be able to get to it in the next couple of days, and I'm really curious just to see, like we had discussed, just the. If there was any change at all in the shortening the overall length of the bullet, I know that we're reducing the space within inside the casing between the powder and the bullet. So, I just didn't know if that would change anything and the velocity. It's just something in your head that you think about and you're just like, oh, but in reality, like you're saying, it shouldn't. So,
right.
Be just curious to see what numbers are going to actually dictate.
I mean, I guess the only other thing to do would be to check the casing after you fire the first couple rounds and see if there's any bulging or anything to see if there's any overpressure. But otherwise, like Dave said, in the last conversation, I think the only thing it would do was make it go a little bit faster so the power factor would go up, but not significantly, I wouldn't think.
Right. I mean, Like we were saying, it should be like what, 1 or 2 points in increasing the power factor. But again, like we all agree, we'll see when I put them to the test.
Just don't blow your hand off.
I don't. Trust me, I don't want to. I don't want to. However, I wanted to say that I am excited. I am so excited that after shooting nationals, I'm just like wanting to go out here and shoot local matches. But of course, I know people are going to be like, oh, you little wussy. But however, it's getting cold outside. And temperature is going to dictate, local matches for me right now, along with ammo.
Well, I don't know if anybody would call you a wussy. It might be a different word that sounds similar.
Right. Right. I was just trying to be, radio polite, I guess. So that's where I'm at right now. What about you, Leo? What's going on with you?
My house still smells like skunk, but now it smells like skunk and vinegar and charcoal and weird scented candles. So like when you take a poo and then you light potpourri. And now it just smells like poo, and it smells like poopery, basically. My house smells like poopery.
But you're supposed to spray poopery first before you poop.
Well, I wasn't expecting Mother Nature to come at my dogs with a vengeance, Huggy.
Yeah, wasn't that on Monday?
No, that was on Tuesday. Monday was my day off, and nothing bad happened. Tuesday, when I went into work, God decided to mess with me. Well, and my dogs, and my child. Right. So, all around, not a great Tuesday. But it ended well. The week, not the day.
Okay.
But my house still smells like skunk and scented candles and charcoal and white vinegar.
That's an odd combination, gotta say.
It's fine. That thankfully, this room smells like nothing. Oh, not true. I did have dough and heat estrus break in here one time. So it actually smells like dough and heat pee. But I don't mind that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's fine. Like, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. For the rest of the world who can't see this, he's in his gun closet.
Yeah. It's coming out. It's fine. But anyway, what about you, Dave? How's your house smell?
Well, this morning it smelled like a 75-pound Great Dane puppy pee.
Well, there you go.
Because it was raining outside and he didn't want to get wet, so he decided to pee his 3 gallons on the floor in the kitchen. That was nice. Yeah.
How did you, like, you didn't discover it the old-fashioned way by stepping in it, did you?
No, we actually watched him as he emptied his bladder.
That's always.
And then he did his typical, I'm going to walk 6 to 8 feet as I pee so that I can spread it all over.
Sharing is caring.
Oh, right. My gosh.
Oh,
that's after so we've no all had sleep at work.
There you go.
I would love to see the expression on your face when this is all happening.
So,
I mean, it's had to be like, really? This is not happening. Really? It's happening.
Yeah. So I would like to, I'll start the day off with a PSA, a public service announcement.
Cool.
Have you guys cleaned your pistols after nationals yet?
Pistol, yes. Magazines, no.
Okay, so I've cleaned my pistol and my mags, but I probably waited about a week before I did it. But I would suggest not being like somebody I might have seen recently with a SIG who thought they had cleared their pistol and then went to remove their slide and got themselves in the leg. Oh, yeah. So, just a little PSA. What I believe happened was, I believe he pulled the slide back and ejected the round in the chamber and let the slide go, and then was probably like, oh, look, let me take my magazine out now. Not realizing he had chambered around in the meantime.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially. That was like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof, that's bad.
Not good. So PSA to everybody, drop the mag, then clear the weapon. I would suggest pulling the slide back multiple times and visualizing before you pull the trigger.
Yeah. I mean, I know generally we joke about it in safety third, but not when it comes to a loaded/unloaded firearm. I mean, because that not only will that get you disqualified for a negligent discharge in a match, but it'll also get you sent to the hospital.
It will.
Yeah.
Especially.
Which one of those is bad. The other one's.
Especially when it happens in your home.
Yeah.
With the
police coming to your house. No, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got a whole lot of visitors.
Yeah. That is a bad day. Well, hopefully that person is okay. Otherwise,
doing actually very fine.
You know, sans hole in the leg situation, but...
It's merely a flesh wound.
Tis but a flesh wound.
All right, so now that I've got the PSA out of the way, I know I had shared some documents with you guys concerning statistics. I am going to pull them up here. Yeah. USPISA. The first thing I really wanted to talk about, there's been on a lot of other podcasts, we'll get into the actual national statistics here in a minute, but there's been a lot of discussion about should they do away with certain divisions, like single stack, things of that nature. Huggy, right. did you get a chance? I know Leo looked at these. Did you get a chance to look at these at all?
Yes, I did.
All right. So for everybody out there in airwave world, I listen to a lot of different podcasts, and one of the topics that comes up is participation in certain divisions and what does it look like and should certain divisions be dissolved in USPSA. So I went back into practice score and went in and grabbed the numbers for 21 different major matches, all of the area matches. Now, I will say this, all area 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 had numbers for 2020. Area 2 did not, because for some odd reason, they run their area championship after nationals every year. So I have the numbers from 2019. So when I ran through all of these numbers, Limited 10 ended up having extremely poor participation. The average was 2.33 shooters at a major match shooting Limited 10. 19 out of the 21 matches had fewer than 10 participants. Now let's go to Revolver. Revolver had a little more. They had an average of 2.76 shooters per match, with 18 out of 21 having fewer than 10 participants. And then you have Single Stack, which had a little better participation at 10.95 shooters per match. And half of them had fewer than 10 participants. And if I add, instead of saying fewer than 10, if I say 10 or less, then it's like three more matches you could add to that. So more than half would then be 10 or fewer participants. And we're talking, you know, hundreds of participants here in these matches. The next lowest participation level was PCC at 34. So three times as many as single stack, and 15, not quite 15, but 11 times more than Revolver, and you can almost say 15 times as many as Limited 10. So the numbers are very interesting. I almost feel like, I don't know that USPSA would ever abolish or do away with a division, but I kind of feel like you could probably put Limited 10, Revolver, and Single Stack in a single division, call it whatever you want, low cap, whatever, I don't know, because they're all going to be 10 Other. Rounds or less. Yeah. But what I did find interesting is Carry Optics has only been around, I think, for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And in 21 major matches, it was the most shot division. Mm-hmm. Just a hair over open, but
yeah,
but it
like
is
literally,
yeah, 63.29 average competitors versus 63.00 average competitors. So it's a virtual tie, but it goes to show the popularity of Carry Optics and where it's going.
Well, and I would agree with you that I'm not saying get rid of Limited 10. As somebody who has shot Limited 10, I mean, it was low cap nationals, but as someone who has shot Limited 10, I get why people would want to shoot it, because it's like production, only the gun's slightly nicer. You know, you can have a magwell and whatever. So really the advantage of it is not significant, but I see where it has a place. But like you said, you know, put Limited 10 and Revolver in what you would call, yeah, just call it low cap. And then, you know, you'll have what, four or five whole participants in that area match. because, you know, you don't want to lose. It's a limited revenue stream, I guess, for USPSA, but you still don't want to lose participants or people that would, hey, maybe that's the introduction for them to get into the sport and then move to a different division where they wouldn't otherwise participate. So they're like marijuana. They're a gateway division.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, and I agree with what you're saying. I would, if I'm an executive at USPSA, I don't know that I necessarily want to ostracize anybody, you know, or push them out. So I don't know that I'd want to do away with it. But, and like you said, limited 10, you've got the major power factor, you've got the added weight to the gun, the magwell, and you've got places where you can only have 10 round magazines. So for those people, you know, that's all they can shoot. So right. I would hate to say, well, you know what, we're not going to allow you to shoot our competition anymore. We're doing away with it. But I can definitely see the consolidation. And it makes me wonder, you know, why they have nationals just for those. And maybe you just need to have a single low-cap national where you have all three of those divisions shooting instead of having carry optics and production like this year. It's a low cap national, which is limited 10 revolver, single stack, all shoot the same 3 days.
Right. And that's all you do.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that makes sense. I don't see the downside to it, at least not, you know, on the face of it, but you never know. I mean, I'm also not, I don't have the global vision to see what the downside would necessarily be.
Right. I definitely think I liked that they did a PCC, your pistol caliber carbine nationals, all by itself. I think they should keep it that way. And then you can have the other four combined together in some form or fashion.
Well, yeah, and I think that also gives the opportunity for people that do shoot multiple divisions to, hey, listen, shoot, you know, your open gun and then come back and you know, for those people that are grandmasters, masters, A, B level shooters that are sponsored and what have you, it's no skin off their nose to go to more than one national event, you know, where now you only have to train for PCC for that national, and then you can go back, pick up your open gun and train for that specifically. You know, so it gives them the opportunity to shoot multiple divisions and have time in between to prepare.
Yeah, I would agree. Any thoughts, Huggy?
Actually, you guys are so right on. I can't really disagree. The only thing I would add to it is the fact that, you know, it is another revenue stream because you just don't, you know, it's out there. I will follow up with Leo. It's just also, you know, some people, that's where they're going to start off at. That's where they're going to start off at. And that's where they might feel that they're can be competitive in that area. And they might be like, well, don't want to get into production because that field is so big. I can't, you know, put myself up in that, you know, with the top shooters. So I think that might be an area where the you know, the administration is looking at, like, this opens up the field where people can feel like, oh, I'm competitive in this division versus, you know, other divisions where, you know, you were like, oh, well, if I get in production or carry optics, I will never be up at that level, you know. So I think it's a good idea to keep it, you know, keep it in, like you said, a low cap. I also like the fact that, like you said, that the PCC was all done completely by itself, because the three of us know what it's like to shoot at local matches and you have one person shooting limited and then they're also shooting PCC. So now we got to sit there and wait for them to change out, you know, their gun to, you know, the PCC. And you're just like, oh, this is going to be a long day. So I will applaud and give props to that we didn't have to deal with that at Nationals. So.
Well, and I mean, if you anytime you shoot a major match or nationals, the thing about it is they're only shooting one gun during your in your squad. You know what I mean? They have to shoot a totally different day, or in this case, a whole other nationals in order to shoot that other gun, which is nice. So, the other thing I would add is PCCs are a completely different animal. We're talking long barrel. I think the stage of fires should be set up for PCC where they can actually exercise the range of the gun, manipulation of the gun. There are certain things that they need to be tested on that is different than a pistol. So,
you mean like stage 19?
Yeah, like stage 19 is a great PCC stage.
100%.
Yeah.
I would actually.
Stage 19 would have been.
Yeah, I would actually love to see some PCC guys shoot that just to see how they do it, how quickly they can do it, how accurately they can do it. I mean, that to me is a stage or a PCC stage worth watching.
Yeah.
It's big enough, it's long enough that you can actually get some separation between the PCC guys.
Well, yes. And like we've talked about before, I know that you and I, Dave, and I'm fairly certain Huggy's been in on these conversations about PCC where, you know, there is that significant gap. And I know you've run a lot of the statistics. It's like, oh, why are PCC and open always at the top? Well, it's because PCC, I mean, they've got the accuracy. Like, they can get A zone hits and they can move faster because they've got a longer barrel. They're more precise. You know, it's more stable. There's less recoil. All of those advantages that come with PCC, and then, you know, quick stages and stuff like that. So yeah, I think you to truly test a PCC shooter, you have to design the stages specifically for that.
I agree. I shot a match. Maybe it was Virginia State 2019. I don't remember. But I remember specifically there was this one stage where it was a seated table start, and the target was probably 20 to 25 yards away. So you stood up, you fired so many rounds, you had a mandatory reload, and you fired so many. I think it was six reloads at like 20 to 25 yards. Gun was unloaded and on the table, magazine was on the table. Your other magazine could come from your belt, I believe. But I specifically remember shooting that stage, and Logan Saunders, who shoots PCC, when he shot it, I mean, it was like once he got his sights on target, it was bap, 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 reload, bap, 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 bap. I mean, his hits were there everywhere there. I could not shoot it that fast because of the distance to the target. And the recoil management. So there's definitely different stages for PCC than pistol.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Stinking PCC guys.
So
they're human beings too. I get that, but
so
what was that banner saying?
It's not illegal, but it should be.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The go fast, don't suck.
Yes.
All right. So the other thing I did was I was curious. Part of my review of nationals and my performance and just plain curiosity was how consistent were the top three shooters in each of the divisions at nationals? And I only looked at the last four that shot. So open, limited, carry optics, and production. So for the open division, you know, Christian Seiler was your winner. JJ was second. KC was third. So it was very interesting. KC was third, but KC won more stages than the other two. As a matter of fact, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He won more stages than Christian and JJ combined.
Combined, yeah. Rakaza only won one.
Yeah, Rakaza only won one stage. Christian won four. KC won seven.
Yeah.
Very interesting. However, KC was very all over the place. Like, if he wasn't, I almost think if you're not first, you're last. I mean, he had 119th place, 137, another 119, 130. So he had four stages in there where I don't know what happened, and I'm not going to sit here and try to speculate because I don't know. He's a world-class shooter. I'm not going to try to speculate what did or didn't happen with him. He's a very, very good shooter. But he had four stages where he was outside of the top 100 in his division.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. And I think that's what did in JJ was on stage eight, he was 93rd, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you look at Christian, his worst was a 46 on that same stage, and that was one of the stages KC won. So I don't remember stage eight. I would have to go back and look at it, but that is
I don't have my book.
It's very interesting. So then I did a, because Excel is so nice, I did a quick average. Christian averaged 9.8th place every time. So basically he averaged top 10 every time. JJ just outside of 10 at 10.6. And KC was basically 30th place every time.
Well, and that goes to what we've talked about a few times and in previous episodes is consistency. When you can manage to be that consistent, and this, I know you're not supposed to use the definition or the word in a definition, but over and over and over and over again, you can just be consistent and just plug along. Like, you don't have to finish first every single time.
No, and I was listening to one of Ben Steger's podcasts, and that's what he was saying. He doesn't go out. He specifically said he doesn't, when he shoots, he doesn't go to shoot it as fast as he can. He shoots consistent every single stage. That's what he does.
Oh, what were we talking about the other day about, it was either his podcast, oh, gee golly, I can't remember whose podcast it was, but talking about shooting it at your, the different levels of your percentage of, like, shoot it where you feel comfortable and then where you are, like, on the edge. Who was that?
I think that was our trip back or down, wasn't it?
It was on our trip back.
Yeah, but I don't remember who that was either, because that was, we wrote that down as a topic.
Yeah.
Is knowing your percentage.
Yes.
And see? How to stay within your ability.
Yep. And again, if that manages to keep you that consistent, where you don't have to finish first, but you're finishing top 10, top 20 out of, you know, 300-400 shooters, you're going to finish up there.
You absolutely are. So I thought that was interesting. Then we move over to limited. Mason Lane was your winner. John Browning was second. And Shane Coley third.
Shane Coley.
Now, what I found interesting. So, well, let me back up before I get there. I'm jumping ahead. So Mason won five of the stages.
Mm-hmm.
Browning won two. And Shane won five. So, again, Shane was in third. He won just as many stages as the overall winner. But he had a few stages in there, 49, 44th, that hurt him. Because on those same stages, Mason was 10th when Shane was 49th. Mason was 7th when Shane was 44th. Those are things that are hard to make up. And the worst stage Mason had, he was 18th. That was it.
Well, and then Browning was only, his worst was 72nd, and then everything else was top 10, basically.
Yeah.
Well, except for
generally speaking,
14th. He had 14th on that one stage.
Yeah.
But yeah, very consistent. Yeah. So you had, now here's the difference. You remember, Christian was at 9.8, Rakaza 10.6, and KC was 29.8. Mason was 5.4, so he was top five average every single stage. Browning was 8.7, and Shane was 9.4. So they all were top 10 average every single stage. That's consistency.
Yeah, and that split is a lot less than with open.
I do want to shout out though to my fellow Canic shooter Nils, who won two stages shooting limited minor with his Canic. Just saying.
Boom. I had a feeling that was going to come up too.
Oh yeah.
I seen you put something on the Instagram and I was like, oh boy, this is another fanboy moment. Listen, if he listens to this, we're happy to have you on a podcast. We can talk about how much Dave loves you.
All right. Yep. I'm going to skip over Carry Optics because I want to come back to that, because there is a moment in time there where somebody basically told the world to F off.
So we're
going to come back to that, and then Leo can have his little fanboy moment.
Yes, he can, and he absolutely will.
Okay, so going over to production, you had Jacob Hetherington from the Army Marksmanship Unit first. Mason Lane was second, and Sal Luna was third. So Jacob won 5, Mason won 4, and Sal won 4 also. So all pretty neck and neck with how they finished overall in the stages. This was the most consistent group of shooters in the top 3 of any division.
Jacob, yeah, I was just looking at the bottom averages.
Yeah, Jacob was at 5.5, Mason was 6.1, and Sal was 9.0. So they were all the most consistent. Now, what's interesting was also JJ won 4 stages and wasn't even in the top 3, even though he won 4 stages. I didn't go back and look at all of his other numbers, but obviously that means there were some stages where he did not do as well.
Right.
Phil Strader won 2, and Nils won 1 also. But again, the consistency, what's interesting is Mason winning limited was average 5.4 on every stage. And when he shot production, he was 6.1 every stage. So just in general, the dude is consistent. He's going to be around for a while. When you shoot that consistent, that's impressive. Right.
Well, and how old is he? He's not an old guy.
No, he's young. But he's also, he meets the requirements to be a national champ, which is 6'9" and 150 pounds.
They're all like stretch freaking Armstrong, those guys.
Well, I mean, they all walked over and were like, Leo, how tall are you?
6 foot.
Yeah, and you were looking up to all of them.
And you're what, 6'2", something like that?
Yeah, and you were looking up to all of them. I'm like, I feel like a midget.
Yeah, literally and figuratively, we were looking up to all of them.
Yeah, and we're like,
it reminded me of like major league pitchers, how tall they are, because so that way they're stepping from the mound, they get a.
They're generating a lot of momentum already, energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's what they are. They're, you know, and you know what? They turn a 25-yard shot into a 22-yard shot.
Exactly. I mean, that feels like a genetic advantage that is slightly unfair.
Yeah. I want to know where in the rule book it says everybody's got to be 6'15", because this is ridiculous.
Because the outliers in those elite shooting level guys are Casey and JJ.
Yeah.
Like, those are like the most average height people.
And maybe that explains Casey's, you know, 4 stages where he was outside the top 100. It was stacked against him. I wonder if they were just tall, high ports.
Probably, you know.
They're set up for guys who are, you know, ridiculously tall.
Yeah, right.
I think Casey should talk to them about getting a port at about 4 foot. And then we'll see. We'll level that playing field real quick.
Just asking for the exemption, you know, just a reasonable
Americans
exemption.
With Disabilities Act. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
right.
Absurdity. But all that does is make them that much more impressive when they're not looking like Zorak with freaking condor length arm reach.
And that's exactly what you called them. There. You're like, this is the condor squad.
Yeah, it was flipping absurd. And I'm like, I'm 6 foot. I am not a slouch when it comes to height. You know, especially for a Hispanic dude.
Right. So now we're going to move. Now we're going to move over to carry optics. You had Max Michelle, who was first. You had Jason Bradley, who was second, and you had Wanzik Kim, who was third. All very good shooters. Max had a horrible first day. I know after day one we were talking, and I believe he was like 90 points behind.
Yes.
Something like that after day one, yep. And I was like, ooh, this is not good.
Yeah, I remember having that conversation.
Yeah. So just to recap real quick, day one for the super squads was stages 1 through 7. On stage 6, Max was 121st. I don't know what happened, but something snapped inside of Max Michelle. Because the next stage, he was first. He leaves the range, comes back the next day. He's second on his first stage, and then he runs off 7 consecutive stage wins. So in 9 consecutive stages, the worst place he comes in is second.
Then, I mean, I can explain it.
What is it?
We all know what happened is that he and I met. We touched hands, and it was just a delayed. It's a slow release capsule, is what that is. Is the next day my powers were imbued into him, and he just. That's why I shot horribly and didn't finish outside of like I was in the bottom 200 every single time, and he stole all my power.
There you go.
He's like Rogue from X-Men. You know, he took all my powers and ran with it.
You know, I'm a thank Max for that because I got some good appetizers out of it. So
nobody likes it when you say things that are hurtful, Huggy.
It wasn't personal. I was thanking Max.
He did not finish outside of the top 10 for the last 16 stages he shot. The worst place he was in was 9th. And the second worst was 7th. Everything else was 3, 2, or 1. That is somebody who's like, you know what? This is my title. Nobody's taking it from me. So I'll see you guys at the winner's table.
Well, and that was the thing. Like, it was his to lose anyways.
It was
his to keep. Yeah, you know what I mean?
He's the defending. So, yeah.
So that was... I think that was... Just the motivation. He's like, oh, I'm not doing that. Like, and of course, our hands touching, obviously. But yeah, like you want to talk about consistency? Number one. Like that is,
yeah,
that is something to behold.
Yeah,
yeah. The only thing I will point out, like you had mentioned, that the one place in the second half where he was 9th, and what stage was that?
Stage 19. So the long stage. Yeah. And he's an old man.
Equalizer.
He's an old man. Yeah. That's why.
He probably wasn't wearing his bifocals or something.
I'm just pointing it out. I mean, it's just that was a big stage. That was a huge stage.
He wasn't wearing his copper-infused knee bands, you know?
That's right, Huggy. 2 socks. You should have let him borrow yours.
So
then he just would have been number one for everything.
So I'm going to run through the numbers real quick. Not the most consistent group, and actually you could almost argue that this was the least consistent group of shooters. Even though Max was there and Max dominated, Max was on average 10.7, so top 11. Mm-hmm. Jason was top 15, and Wanzik was top 18 for every stage. Wanzik had several stages where he was... He had a 55th place, a 73rd place, a 77th. Jason had a 99th. Now, that's not taking anything away from these guys. This is just looking at the numbers and analyzing this stuff. All fantastic, excellent shooters. I don't stand a chance in competition against these guys. This was the one exception to the stats I made. I added a fourth guy in this column, and this was Jay Beal. Because I do listen to the Steve Anderson podcast. I've been to one of his classes and did some video analysis after Nationals with him. And one of the things that struck me when I was listening to him interview Jay Beal was Jay Beal does 90% dry fire. He almost live shoots nothing. He said there are two occasions where one time he took five rounds, he went out and he shot a five-round group, packed up his stuff, went back home. Another time he went and he shot 12 rounds, completed what he was trying to do, packed up, and went back home. And the dude was sixth in his first ever nationals. That is impressive. Someone who's never been there before, someone who doesn't shoot. I listen to podcasts all the time, and you hear and you, how many live or how many rounds of live ammunition they shoot all the time. They set up stages and they practice stuff all the time. This guy barely shoots ammo at all and places sixth. That tells you there is something to be gained from dry fire all the time.
Well, I mean, and even if you look at like Huggy, for example, who, I mean, how much have you been dry firing over the last season, like this season?
Like almost every chance I got. I mean,
right.
It was just, every chance I would come downstairs, I would pick up the gun and I would dry fire just to, you know, better myself. That's, you know.
And like we talked about in previous episodes, look how much it has helped you. Now, imagine if that was, I mean, every day, all the time, that was your jam.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, you guys are a pretty good comparison, other than the fact that, you know, you're not sponsored and right. You know, you got an actual job and all that jazz.
Right.
But your level of improvement versus him doing that much dry firing and then going to the range, you said, what, two times? And we were listening to the podcast where other guys that were getting ready that are masters and grandmasters shooting 500-600 rounds a day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot compared to 17 total.
Yeah. That was crazy. When I heard that, I was like, I got to go back and check out all of his numbers and see where he falls. And he was top 19 on average for every stage. For a guy who had never shot nationals before and dry fires 90% of the time. That is impressive.
Yeah, that is.
And that dude is quick. I was watching some of his videos. That dude is quick. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
See, now you just make me want to pick up, while we're sitting here, and just pick up my gun and, of course, make sure it's safe. But go in here and dry fire doing our podcast.
Yeah, please don't make us call 911 for you.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely check, recheck, triple check my...
Excellent.
Without the magazine.
Always check. Yeah. Yeah, especially since I don't actually know your address. I wouldn't even know where to send them.
Right.
Like, just go to Winchester. It's the big house with the black guy in it. I don't know.
Right. I don't know, but there's a lot of big black guys in Winchester. Good thing I don't live there because I live in Front Royal.
Yep, them too.
Front Royal.
See? Front Royal. But yeah, like you said, Dave, that definitely speaks to the efficacy of dry firing, especially if you're doing it right.
Absolutely. And that's a key point too. You know, it's not just doing it, but it's doing it right. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, you could dry fire all day, and if you're not, like, if you're just doing it without an intended purpose or without any knowledge of, like, hey, these are the drills that I need to do to improve my deficits or whatever it is. Like, if you're just dry fire, like, okay, draw and fire, like, if you're not getting anything out of it, you're just doing a mechanical function over and over again. That's not going to help.
I agree with you, because I actually took a day who gave me some good advice when I started doing the dry firing, you know, about what he picked up from Steve Anderson. So I incorporated that into my dry firing when I come downstairs, and it obviously works. I mean, you all seen it. It works.
Yeah, it's costing me a bunch of appetizers.
Love me some gator tail. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not expensive, or that's not cheap.
No, it was not.
No, sorry.
It was very costly, but I learned my lesson. I definitely know not to, to mess with Huggy anymore.
Especially when you put food in the mix.
Truth. So what else we got, Dave?
So I was going to ask you.
We know how important dry fire is.
Yes, we definitely know how important dry fire is. So that was very interesting. The video analysis with Steve Anderson was very good. There were some things that I don't know that I would have picked up on for sure Well, I'm just going to say I probably would not have. But I found out I was moving into position and then standing completely upright instead of staying low at a better position, a more stable position. When I was moving from position to position, there were several times where the gun dipped pretty low. So it took longer to get the gun up, back on target. Once I got closer to position, there was just a lot of stuff that will also help me in the future analyzing my own video. Now I can go back and look at some other things. And what I thought was a probable or possible concern, which was recoil management, I feel like my dot jumps a lot, but I think it's just because I see it so much, and maybe my problem is I'm focusing too much on my dot still, because I looked at every single video I had that you guys took to look at my the recoil of the gun to see how the management was going, even the pictures, the still photos you took, and I am not seeing where that is a problem. The recoil is minimal. My grip looks good. I do know for a fact that I never had any issues with the gun slipping in my hand. I don't recall ever having too low of a grip on it or anything like that. I think my problem is what I have determined from going back and analyzing all of that is I am still too dot focused. So I am going to have to, over the winter, I think every time I dry fire, I'm putting tape over the objective lens of my dot. I have got to stop looking at the dot. I've got to force myself. And I thought I was being target focused. I don't think it was enough.
Yeah.
So I've got to break myself of that habit. Because I've noticed that, I have noticed that at times I will, during transitions, I don't necessarily track the dot to the target, but I still think I see it too much. My eyes aren't snapping to the target and then bringing the dot over. So
you're going in reverse, basically?
Well, I'm moving over, but I could move quicker. I would transition quicker if I just stopped looking at the sight and then looked at the next target and then brought the gun over.
Right, because the gun it'll come to where you want it to once your head transitions.
Correct. And I think I'm transitioning my head and the gun together too much.
Right.
Not every time, but it's still...
Well, because, I mean, you call your shots. So and I've seen you do it where as soon as you call your second shot, you're starting to move. And I've seen you do it before... But what you're saying is you're still bringing them together as opposed to tracking your head over first to your next target and then bringing the gun up to where you need it.
Correct.
Okay.
Like I'm wondering if I'm still leaving my head, like I am watching my follow through on the second shot instead of bang, the shot goes. It may still be in recoil. I need to snap my head over and then transition the gun. I'm leaving my head there, watching the follow through, and then, moving the two
arcing
together.
Over.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So.
Well, I mean, the good thing is, you know, it's a goal that you need to work on in the off season.
Yeah. It is. I've got to break that habit. I got to pick up that time.
Well, and that's what everything breaks down to in the end is all the, like you're talking about with the video breakdown, all those things in transitioning either visually or physically to the target add up to milliseconds, which add up to seconds, which add up to points.
Yeah. You know, there was something else I noticed too, and I know this is near and dear to your heart, but I found that probably on average 50% of the steel I had to make up.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love steel.
Every time we had a 4 steel array, 2 of them I had to make up every single time. And you will like this. Steve Anderson mentioned a quote from Max Michelle. He said, Max Michelle said, control the steel, control the match. And I thought that was very interesting.
Well, I mean, if you think of some of the stages where there was steel that either initiated a moving target or just that had to fall to, well, not had to fall, but, you know, it counts when it doesn't fall. There was a lot of steel for a not steel challenge match. There was a bunch of steel.
There was a bunch of steel.
And it could definitely dictate what was going on because there weren't as many no-shoot mics as we originally thought. And those points add up.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting there shooting at steel and not getting those points, that drops you in the standings. As you can tell by where I finished in the standings.
Well, I can tell you, like, from my perspective, yes, I agree that there was a lot of steel there. My issue is the fact that I was actually shooting and trying to move before, you know, it was like I would just see the steel and I was shooting and I'm moving. So I was already moving the barrel as I'm firing. And that's when I'm like, oh, shit, I got to go back. And that's when I was getting my mics. I just need to really, you know, I need to really fire, let it go, and then move. But I was moving before I was firing, if that makes any bit of sense. And that's why I was missing, because I was already anticipating going to the next spot or the next steel target, you know.
Right, you were thinking ahead and not shooting the
target. Right, like you had called your shot, but you called it before you actually had a visual on it.
Right.
Correct.
My gun's pointed there.
Well, the funny thing about steel, it gives you that false sense of like, oh, it's steel, I'm going to knock it over. Like, you just intuitively think, like, it's steel, it's going to fall.
Right.
You know, and then it doesn't, and you're like, well, how did I miss a hunk of steel? Well, I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, pretty friggin' easy.
Yes.
If you do dumb stuff, like, don't actually look at your target or your sights on the target and then break the shot. So don't do that.
That was it. That's it. Perfectly well put. Well put.
Yeah.
I'll give you an appetizer.
I want to be. So yeah, don't miss steel. It adds up.
It does. It sure does. Mm.
So thank you, Max, for that. Appreciate that. It's good advice.
Words of wisdom.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything else?
Well, SHOT Show's canceled. That was my big topic for this episode. Yeah. So now that we can't get press credentials anyways because we're not that big of a deal, guess it doesn't matter because we couldn't go because we'd just be going to Vegas for no reason.
Is that a problem?
No, but then I can't explain to my wife why I'm going to Vegas.
Oh, yeah, without her?
Right, yeah, hello. Come on. We're all married. Sand at the beach. You know. So SHOT Show's canceled, so that's kind of a bummer. You know. But again, we weren't gonna go this year anyway, so
it makes me wonder if the what's that Great American outdoor, is it the Great American Outdoor Show, whatever it is, in Pennsylvania?
Yes. I went there last year and I'm hoping that they don't cancel it, but I have a funny feeling there are.
Well, I definitely feel that's going to depend on what happens Tuesday.
Yes.
Go out and vote, by the way, everybody, if you haven't done it already.
Even though you're going to hear this after you would have voted.
You should still go out and vote. I hope everybody who listens to this voted because it's your civic duty, you know. Whoever you vote for. Just go vote, or
not.
You better have voted. Good call, because of the whole Wednesday thing.
Yeah. So we'll have to make that maybe a priority, trying to get up to Pennsylvania for that. Because there's still a lot of stuff. There's a lot of manufacturers and whatnot there that we could talk to and get some information from and do a whole podcast episode just on that alone.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually when I went up there last year, I was actually it was an okay show. I just felt like I was hoping that they would have a little bit more gun wise, you know. But I mean, it was good. I walked through the whole thing. Thing's huge. I don't know if you guys have ever been up there before.
No.
Pennsylvania, it's a good state.
Yeah.
It's okay. No,
but I'm talking.
That's all right.
The sporting.
No, I have not been.
Well, it's huge. I mean, that thing is just monstrous, and there's all kinds. It's just packed with people. So I suggest that if we go up there, that we get up there early, because that place just fills up. And you come in there around about noontime or anything like that, there is no parking, and you're parking miles away just to get in. And then when you get in, it's wall-to-wall people. But yeah, it's great. They've got everything from guns to bows to furniture to RVs.
Everything
that.
Outdoor, right? So camping should be everything.
Yes, camping, everything. Even houses. They even got log cabins. Buy a log cabin.
Oh.
So.
Dave just got real interested.
I did.
My Zompocalypse cabin.
Do they have yurts? I would love to live in a yurt.
You know the downside is? I honestly have no clue whether or not he's being serious.
Actually, I do like yurts. I have some strange fascination with yurts.
Yeah, I was like, he might be for real. Yeah. It's a circle. It just keeps going because it's a yurt.
Takes me back to my cold weather training days in the Marines.
But yeah, it's just I didn't see any yurts.
It whacked in the yurt. Oh boy. Anything else before we end this really, really derailed podcast?
Who doesn't like to say yurt? I mean, come on.
It sounds like you got something in your throat you're trying to clear out. Yurt.
Yurt.
Oh boy. Okay.
All right.
Well, this devolved quickly.
All right, Leo, what should we not be until the next time?
Don't be a little bitch.
All right, we'll see everybody on the next episode.